There's another side to good health, and that's good mental health.
What kind of rigs are you guys working with?
We're on standard issue MacBooks,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, we're rocking dusty MacBooks right now.
Yeah.
That various states of disrepair.
On the last legs.
Mine's probably hanging on by a thread the most.
Hanging on by a megabyte.
Connor's laptop is like the old dusty hormone monster in big.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways, yeah. What's up, guys? Thank you for having me on. Are we going, or is that, was this all like...
We're going.
This is it. Okay.
Yeah.
This is it. This is the pod.
We're going to cut all of it, but we're going. We're technically going. I've been excited to chat with you for a while. Your book has been on our radar, How Golf Can Save Your Life. So I suppose we should start there. We're not at the point yet as a media entity where we're getting private advanced screenings of films that are coming out or advanced manuscripts of books that are yet to be released. So hopefully we'll get to that point someday, but we'll be like the many other people on May 9th when your book drops. We'll just be hitting the Amazon button refresh page to try and get it to our doorstep. But
thank you. Do you guys think that Macklemore will buy it?
We can definitely kick them tires.
Okay.
Would that please you?
No. No, it would please me.
Okay, we could make sure that he doesn't get one too.
Yeah, we could withhold it from him.
Yeah. We'll show up at his house, and if the Amazon person pulls up, we'll take him out.
Whichever scenario would please you, I think we can do.
I would do a trade with him if he can give me like a sweater with like a golf hole drawn on it that's like blue or whatever.
Right.
Like his shirts.
Yeah.
I would give him the book. That, or he could give me a verse. Anyways, How Golf Can Save Your Life. It's out on May 9th. it's a pretty serious book. No, it's a book that deals with depression, mental health, and it's got some media criticism, some history, some commie shit. Mm. We love
commie shit, for the record. I don't know if we've expressed that explicitly enough on the show, but we're here.
Blacklist me, daddy.
Yeah, exactly.
It's got one chapter of some communistic ideology. Actually, did you guys know that the guy who designed the greens on, or not the greens, the sand traps on like the eighth hole of Pebble Beach was on the, like, he was like a big wig in the U.S. Socialist Party in like the 1900s and 1910s.
No, that's interesting. Mm. What's their name?
His name is Robert Hunter, not the Grateful Dead guy. He grew up down the street from Eugene Debs and ended up becoming like kind of this like early 1900s radical. He wrote a book called Poverty, which was like sort of the first sociological study of poverty in America. And from there, he got like really into like Marx and W.E.B. Du Bois and was this like radical anti-racist communist guy. He literally went to the Communist International. But he was also like a mad mega rich kid, and he had a house at Pinehurst, and he actually won their tournament, the North South Invitational or Open or some shit. Then the Russian Revolution happened and he was like, all right, I was just kidding about it. Then he wrote this book called The Lynx, which is like the manual for golf course design.
What
that
a pivot.
Is still. Yeah. I mean, no, he was like a very big amateur golfer, like in the era when amateur golf was more of a big deal than professional golf. And yeah, he like met Lenin. He corresponded with Tolstoy.
Whoa.
He was friends with Mark Twain. I wrote a chapter about him. That's the commie chapter. And I got a hold of his like unpublished memoir and had some interesting stuff.
That's a banger, Drew. Dang.
Thank you.
That's very cool. So take a step back and could you outline like the general premise of the book, why you were called to write it, what the process was like?
I mean, so basically I'm 33 years young.
What's your sign, Drew?
Taurus.
Taurus. The bull. Is that right?
Yeah.
What does that mean? Is it an aggressive?
No, it's more of a Ferdinand the Bull style bull. I believe that the Taurus is predisposed to sloth. which actually brings me to how I ended up writing this book. So I worked at a company called Vice Media as an editor at their old music website, Noisy. By the time it was like 2016 or something, I was like completely burned out, like could not function, experienced like a major depressive episode. And I moved back with my parents into their home, which is the coolest thing you can do. They lived in rural North Carolina. And as I sort of convalesced and recovered, I rediscovered golf, which I had played like pretty heavily in high school, was never very good, but I just fell in love with it and it became a key part of my recovery. Once COVID hit, I was working as an editor again. We all got laid off. The entire place I was working, we all got laid off. I had written some pieces about like golf in the early days of the pandemic because it was like such a big thing. I had had an agent like get in touch with me. Shouts out Tina Pullman. She was like, have you ever thought about writing a book of essays about golf? And I was like, yeah, maybe. And then like 2 days later, I got shit canned. And then I was like, yes, I have thought a lot about this. And I really want to. I just sort of like started with that one central experience, kind of wrote the book around that. Each chapter of the book is like structured around a lesson that golf has taught me. And the cool thing about using like a structure for a book is like, as long as it's like there sort of this as the scaffolding, you can just like do whatever you want. And so I was able to jam a bunch of shit into the book. I heard once that you're not supposed to talk for more than 2 minutes in a row on a podcast, and I feel like I've blown by that.
I don't know who said that before, but we disagree.
Oh, okay. So now that I've shared like the worst thing that's ever happened to me, now it's your turn. One of you guys has got to go. What's the worst thing that's happened to one of you guys? It can be like a fun worst thing.
That's a great podcast question, though.
Straight up, what's the worst thing that ever happened to you and why?
Yeah.
I had to walk like 4 miles-ish to get to a KFC parking lot in rural Rhode Island to catch a taxi at 4 a.m. to make a 6 a.m. flight in Boston. This was very recent. Wow. Yeah, this was last year.
Yeah.
And I had my golf bag with me.
So you're like speed walking.
Because Ubers and Lyfts like don't come online between like 2 and 4. So I had to call like a local taxi man to meet me. And he did not speak English very well. And he kind of like told me where to meet him. Yeah.
Damn.
Wow. He sent you the coordinates.
Wow. Yeah.
That sounds like a like caddy boot camp or something. Like some hazing ritual that they might put you through at a caddy yard. That's awful.
I'd like to imagine that you had like a staff bag on you.
Yeah, piano wire, leather, heavy bag.
I'm so glad I didn't, but I did have a very, very loose, not very stable travel golf bag. It is so, I can fit so much in that golf bag and I shouldn't be able to. I mean, it's basically like a big sock.
It's a sleeping bag for your golf clubs, basically.
It's the old hormone monster.
Yeah.
We circle back.
I don't think you're allowed to like adult cartoons anymore, though.
How come?
The Rick and Morty guy.
Oh,
is he's like a pervo.
Yeah.
Yeah. He got charged with aggravated battery or something, right? Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. That's wild.
Yeah. He's a bad dude.
Yeah.
All stoners have to throw out like 50% of their shit.
Yeah, but that happens everywhere. It's like it's just the lesson is like all dudes are bad dudes.
Yeah, I had no idea, and I'm not a consumer of Rick and Morty. Never watched a single frame of it. But that doesn't really surprise me.
My hot take is that adults shouldn't watch cartoons. Like I never watched Family Guy, The Simpsons. Like I don't want to watch cartoons as an adult. Like I'd rather watch an actual cartoon made for kids than cartoons that are made for adults. So I don't know. I just, my personal opinion, I just can't get on board for shows that are made for kids but have adult themes.
Oh, so you think that adults can watch like SpongeBob because it's made for children as opposed to like Big Mouth, which
if
is made
for adults?
If you want
a cartoon, just watch a cartoon. Or if you want something that has like that's funny. Just watch a regular television show that's not a cartoon.
Anyways, so wait, Bradford, where did you play golf in the Philly area?
Walnut Lane.
Love Walnut Lane.
Walnut Lane, I played there probably most often in Philly, but then when I was playing in school, we played mostly in Chester County. So, Chester, Lancaster, Delaware County. That was our stomping grounds. Inniscrone. That was our home course. Chester County is beautiful. Like, I guess that leads up to my question: where does golf fit into your life? Like, you wrote a book about how golf can save you, but how did it save you?
The thing about golf is, like, it can be a metaphor for just so many things, and it's just this sort of abstraction that requires so many different mental and physical skills. You can really read into it any way you'd like. It is sport as parable. And, you know, a lot of it is also just like, a lot of it for me was just being like, man, I suck ass at this. Mm-hmm. And I can either get mad or, in the parlance of Discord, get good, or just not worry about it and have fun. Yeah, no, in golf, I really found sort of this like perfect box that I could put all my feelings in and like think about them in this way that was abstracted from, you know, the actual things that were going on in my life, and through sort of working them out, being like, okay, well, I have like low self-esteem. And so, like, you know, my low self-esteem is telling me, oh, you fucking top that ball, you're no good. And then just being like, oh, it doesn't actually matter. And like, I just have another chance at doing it. I don't care about like what I'm scoring here. Mm-hmm. And being able to sort of be like, okay, well, if I can sort of accept that mistake and appreciate the fact that I'm just like out here having fun, you know, what does that tell me about, you know, whatever else is going on in my life?
Yeah. And so where do you feel like the transition was able to take place for you? Or is it still happening where like you can take the same mental approach of the fact that I topped this shot doesn't actually matter or mean anything, translated to this conversation that I had in the real world didn't go so well, and at the end of the day, that doesn't really matter either. Where has that transition been for you? Not from like a defeatist perspective, but just from like a, I don't have to put all of my emotional weight onto this tiny little thing that's happening in my real life.
That's a great question. Sort of immediately after this recovery, I moved out of my parents' house and into a garage in Durham, North Carolina. It was like a garage that had been redone to be like a guest house. And that was like my first time really living fully on my own by myself. And I was like, okay, I am an adult now. I'm a real big boy. Mm. 26 is the new 36, and I need to sort of follow the rules of adulthood. Mm. So I just sort of immediately fucked that up and stayed up until like 4 a.m. doing work and like sleeping till noon and not starting work until like 8 p.m. because I was playing golf at Hillendale Golf Course in Durham, North Carolina, best public course in America. At first, I was sort of like down on myself, being like, what is wrong with me? I'm like a creature of the night. I was thinking about like the rules of golf and sort of being like, well, you know, the rules of golf are arbitrary, and, you know, the point of golf is actually have fun. You know, there are certain ones that you follow and others you don't, except in like, you know, a competitive context. And even like with like club selection or whatever, you take what works for you. It doesn't matter, you know, what anyone else is doing.
Yeah.
And then how golf can be sort of this vehicle for forging relationships. You know, we're all dudes here. And, you know, making friends as an adult man is like embarrassingly and surprisingly hard.
Totally.
At the same time, there are certain contexts in which making friends suddenly becomes very easy. And like, you know, Like, think about, like, if you're at a bar and you bum a cigarette off a stranger or get a light or something, you know, you end up having a nice conversation, but that's bad for you. But yeah. Golf, you know, if you play around a golf with a stranger, you're stuck with them for like 3.5-4 hours. And so, you know, y'all better make it work.
Mm-hmm.
Better become friends. I also have a chapter in the book where I talk about my relationship with my father and how, you know, I used to play golf with him when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I was like a teenager or whatever, I'd be like, ah, I fucked up. This is horrible. This is the worst thing that's ever happened. And my dad would be like, no, just go over there, find your ball, hit it. It's fine. And then I'd be like, fuck you, dad. And...
As in, like, you don't understand the pain that I just went through by slicing this shot or something?
Yeah, yeah. On the 7th hole of Red Fox Country Club in Columbus, North Carolina, there was a particular hill that was, like, right off to the side of the fairway, and I would always hit my ball up there, and it was just, like, I felt, like, humiliated. Even though I was like 15 and only doing this in front of my dad, and I would be like, I need to quit golf right now. Mm. And he would be like, no, it's fine. Just no one cares. Like, you can just get your ball, hit it, and move on with your life. And sort of like later on, I realized, oh, my dad wasn't like, he's a nice guy. He's not an asshole. He's just trying to like, make me sort of like follow through on things. Bradford, how intense was your college golf team and like the college golf scene that you were sort of a part of?
Well, personally, like Connor, Drew, and I all share a college golf experience, but me personally, I felt pressure not only to compete, but like to be a representative.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't feel great for me. The mm-hmm. the vibe of my team was very loose, I would say. Like we were always cracking jokes. Like it was very loose. It was a very like, I mean, it was Division III, right? So like there are not a huge amount of stakes here, but we had some incredibly talented golfers, like dudes that could shoot under par regularly. But also everyone on my golf team had a nasty little drug habit. So it was loose, but I felt under the microscope and I felt pressure every single day, and it was not a healthy or fun environment for me to be around for 4 years.
I can imagine that would not be fun. I can also imagine being around a bunch of people who are on drugs a bunch is like weird.
Went back when I didn't do them. So yeah, back when I was scared of them.
You're terrified.
What about you guys? Did you guys do drugs on your college golf teams?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, no, I didn't actually want you to answer that.
No. I'm happy to answer it. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely.
So you guys were all collegiate golfers.
We were all D3 collegiate golfers. Yeah.
I only played 1 year though. I think you guys played all four, didn't you?
Yeah, I did all four.
I got kicked off the team after my freshman year.
Yeah,
sick. You got kicked off the team?
I love this story. This is great.
Yeah, what happened? How many times has this been on the show?
Not much.
Not much.
Oh, I was just trying to make sure that you weren't going to tell a story that you've like told every guest or something.
I don't think I've ever told this story, have I?
To us individually, but not I don't think on the microphone.
No, I was kicked off the team because I had a 1.9 GPA after my freshman year. that was it.
Huge.
Wow.
And you know, here I am. Just I graduated, not with honors, but I did graduate.
You made it.
I made it.
No, that's fair. My freshman year, I like couldn't figure out Econ 101, and like
doesn't make sense.
It doesn't. No,
I failed Econ. I did.
That's what they don't tell you is like Econ 101 is like all fake. So what position did you guys play in college golf?
Catcher.
Kicker.
Yeah, kicker. I was number five. Yeah, kicker. I was the cleanup. I was the fifth guy. I was the worst.
I was more like the guy on the, and I think the three of us share this, like the guy on the team that kept everybody's energy afloat while everyone else actually went out and tried their best.
Yeah. For sure. morale guys.
That's good.
Morale guys. Yeah. Chief morale officers.
Yeah. My team was pretty good. Like our 1 through 4, they were like consistently low 70s, low to mid 70s. Mm. And then like, you know, I could get down there, but I mean, honestly, I play better golf now than I did when I was in college, because I have a much better relationship with myself, and like my mental health is better, and I'm not filled with rage all the time on the golf course. So, I mean, it's like crazy how much better I am at golf now, 15 years later. It's fun to come back to it now and enjoy it and play pretty well.
Yeah, that rage will get you.
And I can also imagine, like, I don't know, I hate competition. If I'm playing with another person, I will do markedly worse than if I'm by myself, which also makes it sound like I have, you know, the proverbial supermodel girlfriend who lives in Canada.
She goes to another school. You've never met her.
Exactly. Yeah.
I swear.
Even though, you know, I have said multiple times, like, oh yeah, I just tell myself it doesn't matter. The, like, for me, the like thought of like, oh no, I'm going to embarrass myself in front of this person that is either my friend and doesn't care, or is like a stranger who also, like, it would be incredibly gauche for them to judge me. Mm. You know, I only have those thoughts like after the fact. That's why I'm a writer instead of like a podcaster like you guys. Like when you guys were playing college golf, like, even if, like, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it wasn't that big a deal, it was the biggest deal that y'all had probably played golf in, right?
Oh, for sure. Oh yeah. 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 That's why. Yeah. Any time that we, and I've told this story to Brad and Drew before, but my first ever collegiate tournament as a first year student, I stepped up to the first hole in front of everybody and missed my tee shot.
Ooh.
Whiffed. Clean whiff. Like my,
do you get a breakfast ball in D3?
Fuck no.
But definitely not.
But they did let me. So technically that should have been a stroke, but they didn't count it. So I was grateful for that.
Wow.
Yeah. That was a true adversity story.
If you would have waxed them, I'm sure if they would have come back and assessed you a penalty.
Yeah, they were like,
yeah,
this,
you would have shot like a 68. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, he's not a threat. I mean, he's gonna finish lower quartile.
Yeah. This dude should not have intended to.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah.
Have another go.
That's honestly a beautiful story.
Isn't it?
That's, yeah.
It actually is.
Yeah. And like I was playing with like our conference was really good. Our team was really solid, apart from myself. And so yeah, they threw me a bone. I was very grateful.
Well, give the freshman another one.
I did ask everyone to turn away for the second one as a joke, but they humored me. Yeah. Said, everybody, please don't look at me. I quit, actually. I think I'm done. I think I'm actually just going to leave.
Did any of y'all have like a Duncan Robinson on your team? And by that, I mean a D3 player who now is a minor rotation player for the Miami Heat, or like...
Hell no.
Flirted with the PGA or Nationwide or something?
Hell web.com.
No.
No.
They could have.
No.
For real. Like, the dudes I played with were extremely talented, but had no discipline whatsoever. Mm. No, they ain't had a dog in them. They were just, like, a lot of these guys have been playing since they were kids, so, like, they had a lot of ability just from, like, getting reps in and having their dad be their coach or like belonging to this country club or whatever. So a lot of it just came to them like, oh, I normally go out and shoot 78. So like, I'm gonna just go do it here and like also be high.
Mm. Yeah.
Like it was no different for them. And they probably, I don't know if any of them play anymore. I got to imagine maybe a few of them do, but I've lost touch with them on purpose and wish them well in their endeavors.
Do you think any of them listen to the show?
Oh God, I hope not.
I doubt it. Like I feel like if I like saw, I mean, who knows? Because I can't see who subscribes to the podcast, but I do see like who follows me on social media. And I feel like if I saw one of their names pop up, it would register for me. And I don't think I've seen that. So
Yeah.
I'll keep an eye out for him.
I'll keep
an eye out for him in Philly. Yeah.
Hey, they're probably looking around somewhere. I think they're all at Geno's probably hanging out.
Absolutely. Yeah, dude. Absolutely. Oh, they're at Geno's.
They're buying their thin blue line. Wizard.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. You got to say that shit in lowercase because that is no cap.
Hey. God damn it. Speaking of cheesesteaks, I feel like we should get into our meat and potatoes questions. These are the questions that we ask all of our guests, Drew. What are some of your favorite golf smells?
Towel. After wiping of ball, there's something about the grass, the essence of grass imparted upon, or even wiping with club. I'm not using articles in this.
That's fine.
Response.
That's fine.
Okay. Yeah, towel after wipe with wipe of ball or club.
Right. And you're right, essence of grass after club smash grass.
Yes.
It
feel like, good.
Feel good, pulverize.
Yes.
Essence of. Create essence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even like, you know, I'm not playing twice a week now, but when it's nice out, I play twice a week and I am nowhere near as good as y'all, I assume, are.
I don't know.
But but like even when I hit a bad shot, if I kind of like take a divot and I gotta wipe it off with the towel, you know, the good little smell, sniff that's imparted, it's still like it's calming.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like communing with the earth.
It is.
Without like sticking your face and just planking.
It's right. It is earthy. Like it's unlike just the regular grass smell. Like when you get dirt and sand, there's a particular
je ne sais quoi.
Yeah. There's a hue. There's a palette that comes with the combination of those three. Yeah, that's unique.
The crucial thing, I think, is that it's earth plus destruction. It's like your power imparted on the earth that's like tearing these molecules apart that's releasing some sort of unctuous.
Yeah, that's hard. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like swirling a fine wine
in
a glass.
Yes.
But at the same time, it's also sort of like, it is a harmless destruction, especially if you take a divot, because you can just put it back immediately.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it does also get to the fact that, like, you know, even though to a certain extent golf courses are sort of alienated from the environment, especially like, you know, thinking about 80s like and 90s like Tom Fazio,
thank you,
like Van Halen concert of golf course designs that like ruin natural environments, but like, you know, you get on like a nice Donald Ross or the Sweetens Cove. I've never played there, but it's supposed to be good. But anything that sort of like it works with the earth to kind of create this golf course as found object, you know, playing on one of those, walking through it is a very sort of intense experience of communing with nature in a way that, you know, you're getting your ions flowing or you're accepting the ions. I don't know what's up with the ions, but
ions are moving. Yeah.
Yeah. Forest bathing is the term. All right. Next question.
Mike dropped. Flex bomb. Yep. May 9th.
His show is like, apparently his show is really good right now. Like I've heard him like haranguing people for exclusives. And then they give them to him, and then he plays them and just bomb, 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 bomb.
That's what he does, that's man. He's a legend for a reason.
Yeah, dude. There's like this one series of freestyles he hosted during the pandemic where every single time it's like the rapper and him sitting in lawn chairs, the preamble is always about his Dodge Charger. Just like clarifying.
And his lugs.
This is not some off the lot shit. This is like special to flex. No one else can have this.
As we're diving into the music portion of our meat and potato questions.
Okay.
I'd love to know, you're playing at a golf tournament, and unfortunately there will be people watching you on the first tee. But to maybe counteract the anxiety of a lot of eyeballs on you, you get to play a song that will be your walk-up music. What would your walk-up song be?
This is sort of a fundamentally different thing from like a closer's walk-up song in baseball.
Yeah,
in closer's it's an opener. Walk-up song.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, but if I'm a closer, you know, you gotta play like something tough, like Godsmack.
Yeah.
Wild Thing. Yeah, well, no, all closers listen to Godsmack or Lamb of God, like a like pretty popular mainstream metal band. It has to be. But if I'm a golfer coming up, the song on Roxy Music's Country Life where he sings like Dracula, I'm forgetting the name, or Let's Stick Together, Brian Ferry. Let's go with that one.
That's a good one.
Yeah, it's like bouncy. You're kind of getting in a rhythm.
All right, it's been added to the GGT walk-ups playlist. I'll share that with you after the show.
I would love that.
It's a robust list these days.
It is robust.
It is. So you're listening to Brian Ferry. It got you going so well that you won the tournament. You won the damn thing. And now you're a champion. And 2024, they invite you back and you're hosting. And you get to invite whoever you want. You get to fly in food from wherever you want. You get to curate this menu however you want. What is on your champion's dinner menu?
Champion's dinner menu. Mountain View Barbecue from Columbus, North Carolina. Award-winning barbecue. I went there growing up. I've been going there since it opened when I was like 12. Still really good. And I think it like Guy Fieri went there one time. So
Fieri, please.
Okay, sorry. I didn't mean to respect. I mean to disrespect Dr.
In Flavor Fieri. In Flavortown, no less.
No, Flavortown is a state of mind.
It's true. Yeah. Flow state.
I believe he once said that.
Yeah.
But yeah, as far as guests, I'm inviting you guys.
Sick.
Guy Fieri, Brian Fieri. Who is Brian Ferry and Guy Fieri together?
It's Brian Ferry in a bowling shirt.
Yep.
Flames.
Guy Pearce, the actor. The stars of the movies of the show, the other guys, or is that a show or a movie?
The Will Ferrell movie?
Yeah, with Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah.
With
Mark Wahlberg, with Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
And
directed by Adam McKay.
Yeah.
Adam McKay, yeah.
I'm inviting Patrick Reed. I'm inviting Bryson DeChambeau. I'm inviting Drake.
America's sweethearts, all in one room eating barbecue.
Yep. I'm inviting the guy from The Last Dance who won the quarter throw game.
He's dead. No, he's dead.
Yeah, he's definitely dead.
Yeah, he's dead.
Oh,
yeah.
Shit.
I forget his name, but he's dead.
Big rip to the shrug guy.
He was kind of old then, but you know.
Yeah, but now he's just...
He lived a great life. He's goated forever.
Yeah, he's feet under with a pocket full of Jordan's quarters.
Yeah, he's throwing quarters at the locker room in the sky.
Yeah.
I'm inviting all the Charlotte, North Carolina area golf hustlers who fleeced Jordan back in the like 90s.
You know they're out there. That would be a good that would be a good story.
My uncle is like, or what, he's still around, but he was a very competitive pool player and pool shark at an earlier period in his life. And so he like knew all the big gamblers in Charlotte. And I think he knew like some of the guys who would like hustle Jordan. He was like a real, stimulus package for the gamblers of Charlotte, North Carolina.
Wow.
We love a bailout. We love a stimulus package. Give us the stimmies. Stimmies,
give us
please.
The stimmies.
Yep.
Stimmies, not stymies. Okay, we have...
Excellent name for a golf podcast.
Stimmies.
Started during the pandemic.
It's actually pretty dope.
Yeah, it's a communist golf podcast, socialist golf podcast. Stimmies and stymies.
Yeah.
I love that.
Are stimmies on the stimp meter?
True. Stimpies, ooh. Stimmies, and stymies.
Stimpies. Yeah. The stimpulus package. Stimpulus.
I like where this is going.
Drew, what is your golf toxic trait? And I'll give
my
you
my golf toxic trait.
Yeah, I'll give you an example of this. So my golf toxic trait is that I'll say good shot to my playing partners, but only if my shot was better than theirs.
Okay. I have a couple.
Okay.
One is I'm like, I might be too generous with good shots.
Oh, so they mean less.
No. Where I'm impressed by like anything. Like if you advance the ball and like it's like closer to the hole and not in like a bad thing, I'm like, great, good job, good shot.
Yeah, you did it.
But I've come to realize that some people, it's not a good shot. It's a shot that sucks shit.
Yeah.
Because it's like not on the green, or if it's on the green, it's not close enough.
Right.
Or if it's really close and on the green, it was like an accident and it was like a weird sculled shot that just sort of rolled or something. And like, I think because of that, people can think that I'm like trying to like be mean to them, especially because if you can't tell, I'm kind of dry. Mm. And
so that's great. Armchair psychologists call that toxic positivity, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. My other toxic golf trait is a tendency to immediately reload if I hit a bad shot.
Instant.
Yeah. Second it leaves the club, if it's like looking funky, I'm like, oh, fuck. And it's like a reflex. Like I go into my pocket and I drop a ball and like I would say like 99% of the time, it's like, I'm not like taking the shot. I'm not like hitting a better shot and being like, okay, I took a mulligan. 1% of the time. Okay. 10% of the time I am. And then like 40% of the time I just hit it to get out of my system. And then the remaining 50, I just immediately pick the ball up and act as if nothing had happened.
like it's a tick, like you drop the ball as if to hit another shot and then you just pick it back up again.
Yeah, like as it like nears the earth, I'm like, wait, what am I doing? why do I need to? No, it's fine. I don't need to do that.
That's a really good answer.
Thank you.
I like that.
That and like, okay, another one. I'm like really, if I'm playing by myself, I'm really concerned with speed. I'm trying to, I got to go like 40 minutes, to the place I play and back. And so I'm trying to like, work quickly, efficiently. Mm-hmm. So I'll get frustrated if like I'm behind like a foursome or something and they're not letting me play through.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But then if there's someone faster behind me and they're trying to play through, I'm like, man, fuck you guys. like I'm doing my thing. And then also I will just like, if I'm playing with somebody, I will like stop the round dead in its tracks to like go in like some brush with like a wedge and just sort of like whack at the foliage to see if golf balls pop out. So I'm like a great I'm super fun to play golf with.
There are people that make a whole living off that. I'm a great
combination. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm true. A great combination of fast, slow, toxically positive and like promising, asking you to believe that I'm better than I am.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a really good one. Yeah.
Well, no, because I told you guys earlier, I'm much better when I play by myself.
Right. Exactly. So yeah. Yeah. Please believe me that this is not how it typically goes for me.
Yeah. Yeah. You can see the Getty Images watermark on the picture I show you. And I'm like, this is my girlfriend.
This is just a stock image.
Yeah. And they're like, no, we can clearly see the search bar. This is just a screenshot, and you just search beautiful, beautiful woman.
Yeah. Michael Scott falling in love with the woman in the chair catalog.
The chair model. Yeah.
The chair model.
I got to admit, I'm not an office guy.
Okay. Never mind. Doesn't hit the same.
Okay.
Disregard.
No, I understand Michael Scott as a cultural trope.
Got it.
And I understand. Intellectually, I understand he would fall in love with the chair model.
Yeah,
that's all you do.
Yeah.
Know.
It is imbecility.
It's something that he would do. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And did do.
And did do.
Yeah. There was like office trivia at this one bar in Durham. And like my friends and I would go to do trivia because we were in our late 20s and early 30s. And that's what you do. And then we'd get there and they're like office trivia. And I'm like, shit,
I'm toast.
I'm fucked.
I'm just here for the food truck tonight, fellas.
I'm just here.
Folks.
I love Anadolin's question. What is the time on the golf course you've laughed the absolute hardest?
This is maybe 2-3 years ago. I was in a golf league with three of my friends, one of whom was Luke Davis of Lion Loft.
Oh, yeah.
With whom you collaborated, and I received a head cover courtesy of him.
True.
It's a great head cover.
Oh, nice.
It's in my bag.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. That's great. I love that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, Luke's, thanks, Luke. Luke's a buddy of mine. But
shout out Luke.
We're on this like golf team. The format doesn't matter. And we're on the ninth hole. And just to like screw around, like I think that like Luke is very good at golf, and there was like another guy who was very good at golf. So like what I did didn't matter. And on the tee box, I find, you know, the like brush tees, the tees that look like,
yes,
like a Christmas tree.
They're
almost
wild concept.
Yeah. And I remember seeing them and seeing like in Walmart or something and seeing that it said, like, if you use these, you'll hit it 5 yards longer. So yeah, I'm like, I'm going to hit it 5 yards longer. Watch this. And so I tee my ball up. I take my club back. I'm getting ready to really, really wail on it. Because these tees are of inferior quality to wood or plastic or anything else, the ball falls off the tee.
Amazing.
And bounces on the ground as I'm coming down. And somehow I managed to like adjust my club path as it's like going down. And I end up hitting it on the bounce and making it into like the light rough on the right side of the fairway.
Oh my God.
And everybody lost it. It's the funniest thing.
It's like a cricket shot.
Yeah.
It's That's crazy.
It's both the coolest and funniest thing I've ever done on a golf course. Another time, you guys know Tobacco Road?
Yes. Heard of it. Haven't played it.
It was like an hour from Durham, and I would go there like a lot. It is worth it. I think Luke does like camping trips there.
True.
I want to hit one of those one time.
Yeah, that would be fun.
They have this one green that's like basically a volcano sort of style thing where the green is the volcano, and then they have like bunkers around it. Mm. And my friend and I both hit, we both fucked up our like shots out of this bunker and ended up hitting it on the wrong side of a highway. I run across the highway, hit my ball back on, whatever. My friend sculls his shot and it ends up like hitting, or no, he's in the bunker. He overswings and ends up hitting it also over the highway, but it bangs out the like rear window of a pickup truck that's driving by.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh God.
And that was the most I ever laughed immediately after playing a round of golf.
Wow.
Were you looking over your shoulder the entire rest of the round? Like that's grounds for somebody to come up on you.
Yeah. So yeah.
No, like the guy was pretty cool about it. He was just like, yeah, man, I figured this would happen one of these days. And my buddy and I were supposed to meet up with him at a Sunoco gas station, but like on this one road. But what we didn't realize is there were like, to like give him cash or whatever, but we didn't realize that there were Sunocos on like
all over the place.
Two of four corners of one intersection. And he just said, meet me at the Sunoco at the intersection of blah and blah. So we go to the wrong Sunoco. My buddy ends up calling him and being like, I'm at the Sunoco. Where are you? And the guy's like, yeah, I went home. Just mail me the check. I trust you.
Did he do it?
And yeah. Oh yeah. He's my friend is a man of honor.
Okay, good.
I've always wondered what the aftermath of, you know, you're at a driving range, you see the sign, you know, park at your own risk.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, a par three hole that is like aimed directly at a main road that has like net, but like somebody's always going to hit it over or, you know, push it right. And it goes onto a high, like I've always wondered what the aftermath of something like that. I've never heard a firsthand account. So thank you, sir. Thank you.
Of course. I think it depends on the person.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
this guy, he called his friend who does body work to find out how much it would be to fix the window. It like broke clean, which I think was good in terms of like the cost of labor.
Yeah.
That's just a fresh replace.
Fresh replace. Yeah. I like it. Man,
wow.
But yeah, I think the rule of thumb is like if a ball just bonks on top of a car while it's driving by, the driver is not allowed to get mad. They have to keep going.
Yeah, you just keep it moving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, y'all. Drew, this podcast is very graciously sponsored, if you can believe it, by the good people at Red Rooster. They make our favorite golf gloves.
Yep.
We have a segment on the show called Get a Grip, where we're going to give you a full uninterrupted minute to rant about anything in golf that is grinding your gears at the moment. So take a second.
Grinding my gears.
Yeah, that's like pissing you off right now. Something in the golf world, in golf industry, whatever it might be, something related to golf.
Like Andy Rooney.
Yes, yes, precisely. Exactly.
PGA should make it easier for people to get PGA certified because this is like a bullshit thing. Like, you know, if you're a club builder, you don't like having a PGA certification is a marker of distinction that can advance your career. But, the thing is you don't have to like, you know, shoot a fucking 80 or whatever the formula is, to be good at like building clubs or fitting someone. Or if you, have a very brief window in your life in which you have written a book on golf and could be said to be a golf professional, but are not very good at golf, you should still be allowed to get your PGA certification. That one is definitely not about me.
Definitely.
And yeah, but no, I mean, that's like my minor Andy Rooney gripe, but I do think it is sort of an issue that it's an imperfect system. Assistant PGA pros at golf courses are treated like shit, and PGA pros should be allowed to unionize. Like club pros should be allowed to unionize, much in the same way that, like, you know, the Actors Guild of America or the Writers Guild is.
Yeah, it's pretty wild that hasn't happened yet. Get a grip.
Yeah, yeah. Get a grip.
Get a grip, dude.
Get a damn grip.
Get a
folks.
Damn grip, y'all. Man, Drew, that was
great.
Rooster, redroostergolf.com. We're going to get you a glove.
Red Rooster.
We'll get you a glove.
You're going to get me a glove?
Yeah, we'll get you a glove.
Oh, hell yeah. Absolutely.
It is good to know that they make rain gloves, because I have the sweatiest hands in the world.
I just said that's a huge use case in the summer when it's humid as fuck and you sweat through your leather glove. No one likes that. I'm not trying to airmail my seven iron.
I only wear rain gloves because my hands just sweat like crazy.
Yeah, yeah. I feel you.
Well, we got
it's
one.
Where
for
the
you.
World works. Yeah.
Okay. How did I do as a guest?
Oh, I think you crushed it.
That was awesome.
It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was great. How did you feel as a guest? How did we do as hosts?
I felt inferior to Macklemore.